Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I can't wait for Al to get halfway through the show and be like, what does fish sticks and spaghetti mean? Hello, everybody, and welcome to your most favorite show in the whole entire world. It's Under the Radar. With me, as always, your friend and mine, David Rabbit.
What's going on? Good morning.
My friend and yours, and the king of Monteverde, Ian Khan.
Hello, my friends.
And for the third time in a row, Ariel Cohen.
Not today.
Oh, God. You can't even be baited into this accidentally anymore.
Nah. It may have, that road may have been driven.
You guys have a falling out?
No, not a bit. It's just, there's a, I don't know. You got to feel it. And today is not, it's not feeling the imitation time. I did a minute of it last night on the GDD and I was like, I don't know how much more I want to do with that. At least for now.
All right, fine. Fair. We got a very good show today, I think. Ian had no say in the rundown, which is disheartening. Sad. Did you forget we were going today? You thought we were still going Friday?
No. I thought we were going to... I got confused because Al Melchior put the breakdown. And I was like looking for the breakdown. I was like, oh, there's no breakdown. It's like, where's the breakdown?
I can't wait for Al to get halfway through the show and be like, what does fish sticks and spaghetti mean?
We did the GDD draft, so I figured we were going to talk some about that, but the rundown is fulsome, as they say. It is a fulsome rundown.
I wanted to put a bunch in there because it's, the season starts basically next week. And I just, this is called the Too Low Show. I think that's the theme that I tried as I was building it. I'm like, all these guys, I think, are maybe going a little too low. Their names we haven't really talked about on the show. I don't want to keep beating the drum on the same players over and over. So there are some interesting names. This is actually sparked by Michael Selfino wrote a great column about investing in baseball cards of people you like in fantasy. It's become almost like a yearly tradition. And one of them was Lewis Robert. And, I'm like, oh, man, he's 16th, but the way Selfino's writing about him really makes me think maybe he should be like 8th. With the upside and, how we're treating him and some things we're ignoring about his skill set. And some people call him the next Mike Trout. No one's really the next Mike Trout. I mean, there will be the next. Anyway, the point is, that's how it kicked off. And then I started going down the list and be like, who else is kind of low? So we'll get into that in a minute. This weekend was Tout Wars and last night was GDD. I don't want to go over all the drafts, but do you two have anything you'd like to share? Ian, let's start with you about either. I mean, you did two auctions, so... What popped up to you?
Well, my Tout Wars was last week, the week before.
Right, DVR did Tout Wars, right.
Oh, DVR did Tout Wars. So my Tout Wars is still feeling pretty good. Dylan Floro hurt, not so fun. Jesus Luzardo getting good, pretty exciting. So that feels pretty good. GDD last night, a long night. A long night at the computer table. Lots of glitches.
Like how long? Is this like a six-hour night?
How long was the DVR?
I think it was a full 5. It picked up some speed at the end. I think one.
Yeah, the reserves went well.
Yeah, the reserve. Well, there's
that silver lining.
Well, I think when you do the salary cap draft, the key is if you don't have the nomination clock or the initial bid clock set correctly for at least the back half of the auction, if you don't speed it up, it ends up taking 5 to 6 hours instead of 4+.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and some people would never nominate a player. They would just let the 30 seconds roll all the way down. It was like, come on, man. Come on, you can do it. Let's go.
Who did it? I don't know. You don't want to name it. We'll talk off air about who waited until this going twice.
No. It was a good draft. And some of the players on that, some of the players on this list I was able to get. So I'm sort of excited to talk about them.
Oh, nice. Great.
Yeah.
Serendipitous timing, I'd say.
DVR.
DVR. Do you notice anything you want to point out between your Tout Wars and your GDD auctions?
I think I built the same team structurally twice. I didn't spend up on pitching I think in Tout Wars, my most expensive pitcher was Eovaldi for 10. And in GDD, I did not spend even $10 on a single pitcher. So I don't know who I'm becoming. I'm not entirely sure why my more balanced approach has
You're becoming Larry
not
Labadini.
Spending on pitching. Yeah, I think I am. And I don't think everyone's going to rename the strategy or anything based on that. But I think the problem with the going cheap on pitching isn't starting pitching at all. It's the what do you really do for your saves? Because if you don't have top-end pitching, you're probably not winning ERA and whip and strikeouts. You can do very well in those categories going cheap. But how are you going to find enough saves to at least be top half in that category? And I think it's more likely to be churning on the waiver wire, using precious fab dollars, you know, trying to just out-hustle people in season. And that's tough. Like I feel good about the quality of the roster overall, but knowing that I've got the worst in-season problem to deal with is not a great feeling despite everything else looking pretty good.
Were you taking the tack that, you know, you're talking about how cheap your pitching was? Was it like a bunch of 10s, or was it like a 10, an 8, a 2, a 1, a 1, a 1, a 1? Because in mixed 15, I think Gene McCaffrey's the one who always says it, is like, you know, don't, or maybe it's Larry Schechter too. Don't do the, you know, you shouldn't be buying $7 or $8 players. Like, this should be like high and then $1, because that's the way the pool works out.
Yeah, I mean, I've played that way in the past. This is more fives and sevens and nines. I got Eovaldi again at 9, Tyler Mahle at 9, Ian Anderson at 7, Marcus Stroman at 5, Shane Baz, who's hurt, at 5, Camilo Doval at 7, really late. I know there are flaws with Doval, so I did actually get a little more invested in possible saves here than I did a few weeks ago, back when we did the Tout Wars auction. Emilio Pagan at 2, it was kind of a panic. He got thrown early, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, we have no idea who the closer for the Padres really is. I actually don't think it's Pagan, so I regret that one. Casey Mize and Merrill Kelly for $1. I still think it's Luis Garcia from the Padres. Like I think the former Cardinal, I just have this creeping suspicion they see him similar to how they saw Mark Melancon when they brought in Melancon last offseason. But I don't have anything to go off of beyond gut feel and just underlying skills. And they could mix and match. The Padres could be like the Rays and the Mariners and the teams that we look at and say, we really don't have one closer. That could easily be them, but the difference might be that the quality of those options might be a tick below the options in those other bullpens. Like if I go to the Seattle bullpen and I throw a dart there, whether it's Giles or Sewald or Andres Munoz, I'm pretty excited about any of those pitchers as my last pitcher temporarily, even if they're not getting saves. And then if I have to cut them later, no big deal, right? It's fine. You can take a chance on someone else. But the what do you do with saves, I think, is the hardest thing about cheaping out on pitching right now, because there's so much inflation on the closer pool.
Pierce Johnson has been getting a lot of buzz, and I hadn't really considered him, and then looked at his numbers when he came back from Japan, and he's been awesome. I'm riding Pierce Johnson in my NL onlys. Ian, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the inflation is really high. I got caught similarly early in the auction last night. Somebody put out Steckenrider for $1, and then I was like, oh, Steckenrider, $2. Let's just fill a spot. And then as the auction went on, I was just really frustrated. I was like, gosh, that's the one spot that I'm not really happy with using at that such an early time, especially with the way the auction went. With it was so hot at the top, like people were spending like crazy. Real Stars and Scrubs vibe to the first like 30-40 picks. So I was like, and then, you know, I got it, you know, it's each auction is its own experience, its own kind of like piece of art, you know, where like you're going and like you think you got your handle on it, and then all of a sudden it gets away from you for a second, and then you try to, you know, get it back again. But yeah, I ran into the same thing with Steckenrider, and so we'll see what happens. I was sad when you were mentioning the Seattle pitchers who might get saves and you didn't mention Steckenrider, because I'm like, that's the one I got. But I ended up getting closers late, because they were going crazy. I mean, 25 was Hader, 25, and Hendricks was also like 25. Class A was 23, I think, maybe 22. I ended up getting two guys at the end that I kind of like in Taylor Rogers for 14, which I was talking, I was with Robert Mershak, and I said, this could go up to 16 easily at this point. Because really, that was like the end of the closers, almost, but not really, because there was also Gregory Soto, who ended up going cheap. And Matt Barnes, I took, I think, for 9. I had already grabbed Garrett Whitlock for 4. So I'm pretty excited about that, because I think Barnes is looking great this spring. So I just didn't spend up on the big ones, which was always sort of the... I was like, I think in February and March, when we didn't have any understanding, paying the extra for the Hendricks and the Hader and the Class A made a lot of sense. And now, like, I felt better about taking the sort of middle of the road guys who I think are going to have the job.
That's fair. I feel like not much has changed outside of Kenley Jansen going to the Braves. I feel like not much has changed at all in the closer landscape since spring training started, since January, basically.
Yeah, but the guys, like somebody like Matt Barnes, before he came out and like pitched an inning and struck out 3 guys, before that, like it was like, nah, I'm not touching that guy. And then it was like, oh, okay, maybe you're back. Let's roll with you. And so things have solidified a little bit. Like Taylor Rogers is pitching well. These are guys who are pitching well. So and then like, you know, news like Bednar and what's the other guy's name? Jeez.
Joe Barlow.
No, Bednar and they just announced that he's going to split saves.
Bednar and Broomsticks would be a cool RotoWare shirt.
Be a cool team. Be a cool team name. Anyway, I'll remember it in a minute. But that Bednar is not a guy that you want now. I saw Matt Williams tweet this morning talking about what is half of not very much. Well, you know, because the Pirates are going to win like 32 games, maybe 55 or 60.
That's just, you know, I can get behind some of these teams like the Reds that are supposed to be bad, but the Pirates, I'm still trying to justify. It's very hard to be contrarian. Like, Pirates are going to be awesome.
Yeah, they're not going to be awesome.
Yeah.
They're not going to be awesome.
Well aware. Oh, actually, I got a couple more things before we jump into these players. First of all, the A-only draft, no thanks to you guys. I kind of like the team that I walked away with, but I didn't keep Cortez. I'm sure that everyone was hanging on that. And then I got a note from a fellow writer of ours. I'm listening to Rates and Barrels, as always. They did a whole 10-minute segment on how bad quality starts and wins are and need to be replaced. If only we had a way. They didn't even mention the Money Start article. Come on. So DVR and Eno have been exposed for not reading John Legez's work. Just wanted to bring that up on our show.
Now, what is the Money Start? I have not read the Money Start article.
And Ian. It's right. Great.
I don't have the same responsibilities. That's right. That's right. But what does it say?
It was good, man. He was basically saying the quality starts garbage and wins are garbage and there's got to be a better way to measure these guys. And he basically just figures out a better way to do it. He runs through a lot of stats and either, you know, I think he started with 7 innings pitched and 3 earned runs because, you know, that doesn't give you a 4.50 ERA, like a 6 innings and 3. And then I think he lands on 6 innings and 2 runs as the optimal way to measure it. Like he's like, there are 33 pitchers with this, there are, you know, 57 pitchers with that. And here's the list of pitchers who ended up with this and that. It's a great article.
Do people really hate wins? I kind of like them.
It's like free parking in Monopoly. You know what I mean? Like it's just part of the game for me. I don't mind it.
For me, it adds a level of randomness to the game that I don't mind. Like you're holding on for that win. Like, oh, let me get that win, you know? And it's kind of fun. It can be kind of fun, I think. You know, it's like this Friends and Family League that I rejoined of mine that I created 10 years ago. And I'm going to be in a head-to-head league for the first time in a couple of years. And I'm super excited about it because it adds this kind of level of, on Sunday, you're like, oh my God, don't get a hit, don't get a hit. Like the feeling that you have at the end of a season, you can have it every week in a head-to-head vibe, right? And the reason I stepped out of it, I was doing Tout head to head, and I was like, too much head to head, like, you know, too much head to head. But it's fun to have a head to head league, and I feel the same way about that randomness about wins every night. It's like, oh, please hold on. Oh my God. You know, I was like, as you were talking about the San Diego situation for closers, I was thinking in my head, I've got Snell and Darvish on this GDD team. I got Snell for 11. I think Darvish for 16. That's a big bet I'm making on you, Darvish, there. And I'm like, oh God, am I going to lose wins because of the back of that bullpen? You know what I mean? So I understand that it's not ideal, but I kind of like it. I kind of like wins. I think I'm alone on that, but.
No, I'm with you. I think we get the same end, but different means to liking wins.
DVR, what's your thing, feeling on wins?
I just tolerate them. Like I'm not going to not play because of it, but I'd rather just count innings pitched. Bulk is important, right? If you're a good starter, you pitch deeper into your games more often, and that'd be one way to reward that. I think it also, in leagues that push a lot of relievers out there, keeps reliever wins from popping up somewhat randomly. I mean, I know good teams win more games, so if you have Yankees and Dodgers relievers as opposed to Pirates relievers, then obviously you've got a better shot at vulturing some of those wins. But I think my problem with quality starts has always been I didn't see that as a good alternative. And as described, the money start, at least it does the thing that we were asked about, right? That was a listener question that came in about trying to tweak those categories. And I think they were looking at it a lot like the way John was, where it's like, well, what other requirements can you have? Like, what else can you do? The 5 innings, 2 earned runs was the other, like, you know, shortening it up a little bit because so many starters are out of the game earlier than they used to be. And maybe there's a way to account for it and just make it reasonably difficult still to get there. And yeah, there are ways to make this better. But I also think the problem, and this is what I said on Rates and Barrels too, is just that if you start changing stats and you make them too complicated to the point where people watching the game can't just kind of know what's happening with their team, then you've done a disservice to fantasy baseball because, yes, you've made it more realistic, but you've also made playing the game harder to follow along. Yeah. And that's not good for bringing in new players and keeping people engaged.
All right. That's our wins discussion. Check out more on Rates and Barrels, the award-nominated, the award-winning Rates and Barrels.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is under the radar. Let's get to some players. I don't think I'm going to go down the list. I do want to start at Luis Robert, and is he too low at 16? And then, you know, I'm not going to go like Witt, Bell, Pablo Lopez. We'll bounce around a bit to some fun guys. But I do want to pose this one. Is Luis Robert, are we missing that guy who's going to make that jump from like 16 to next year where like he's my number three? Like, why are we not so hyped and foaming in the mouth about Luis Robert? Mr. Van Riba.
The reason I think is that everybody ahead of him, if I'm not mistaken, has more experience in the big leagues already. So you're not hoping for the full, healthy, great season that he's flashed over parts of 2 years now, right? We're talking about less than one full season's worth of plate appearances, a 294, 345, 512 slash line. It's great. The K rate came down last year. I think it's really interesting that a lot of guys that go in the first round walk more than Robert did last year. And in his debut, he had an 8.8% walk rate. So we don't even know where that skill is going to land. Projections put him in the 6% range. There are other first rounders that walk at that lower sort of rate. I think you could probably, if you were trying to talk yourself into a high-end argument of what's the best case scenario, a Bo Bichette roto profile is probably what you're looking at. Because if you take the best parts of what Luis Robert has done, you're getting power, you're getting speed, an efficient base stealer, and you're probably getting a high average even if that K rate kind of creeps back into the low to mid 20% range after the improvements a year ago.
Is it Robert? Am I Robert? Am I settled? I thought it was Robert. I thought
this has been
year?
Going on for 3 years, and it's because the White Sox broadcast was saying it the way that they thought he wanted them to say it, and then he was doing an interview and he said, well, actually, in my country, it's pronounced Robert. And even that, I feel like I'm still not saying it right. I'm trying to say it right. And everyone's like, well, why is DVR being a d- and saying it in some accent that no one else is using? And it's like, I'm just trying to pronounce his name the way he actually wants his name to be pronounced. That's all I want to do. So I'm not trying to be pretentious or annoying. I'm just trying to acknowledge how this man wants his name to be said.
Well, Luis Robert doesn't sound right. That doesn't roll like Luis Robert makes a lot more sense to me.
Totally, yeah, and it's like Rudy Gobert in the NBA. Same thing. Yeah. His name's not Rudy Gobert. It's Rudy Gobert. The origins of the name, I think, are very similar.
I'm gonna roll with Robert.
On your teams or as a pronunciation?
No, as a pronunciation. Let's go with Robert. That's it. Always make Louis Robert. Sounds like, you know, Robert Mitchum.
That's what I'm saying. It just doesn't sound right. Yeah.
Yeah. Some guy from Wisconsin. Robert, Bobby, Louis Robert. Now let's go with Robert.
Analysis, please. Analysis, please, Ian.
That's all I got. Louis Robert.
This guy hit 401 as an 18-year-old in the Cuban leagues.
Oh. Analysis about Louis Robert.
Yeah.
got it. I thought you were talking about the name.
No, the name's fine. I think we got it.
You know, I got to say, like, I think he's in the right spot, certainly, for this year. I find myself not leaning to him. Something about it I don't fully trust. And he's one of those guys that's like, hey, look, he might be amazing and he's just going to be amazing on a different team. I just don't, I don't want the risk, but sometimes he looks just amazing. I think in the back of my head, I have 2018 where, you know, he had like, which seems like the problem has gone away, but where he had zero home runs and like hit like 250 and everyone was like, oh, what a bust. You know, I think that that's in the back of my head. And if you're looking at the top 15 guys, they've all proven it for a really long period of time. So is there the upside? Can you see that he's going to be a top five pick, top three pick next year? Yeah, you can. Can you also see the downside that he'd get hurt again, you know, and he could, you know, fall to 70th and next year, and you know, yeah, it's possible too. So, you know, guys who are, I'll take Mookie Betts ahead of him in a redraft league right now.
Fair. That's fair. I mean, which Mookie is in Betts, the same
about area.
I consider Mookie Betts. Yeah,
Kinda. Yeah. And that's where Betts is going. And
Robert seems so more. I mean, you get the turn and do Betts and Robert, and look at that.
Yeah, you can. And he's got upside. So, you know, it's the fun part about fantasy baseball. It's really about taste. You know, right. we talk about value, and that's true. But it's also like, who do you believe in? Like, you got a guy on this list that I'm going to jump to real quick, and Noah Syndergaard, where I've got people who say to me, I spent $6 on him last night in GDD and pumped my fist. And I have people who are like, that's the dumbest move you could make.
No,
like, that's a waste of time and money. And I'm like, yeah,
is that
I
Cushing?
Don't know.
Is that Cushing? Because it sounds like you almost did a Cushing voice.
No impressions. All right, okay. But it was, you know, I felt great about it. And I still feel great about it. Because I think the Angels know something. They paid $25 million for him this year. And I'm willing to throw $6 down on him.
Arde Moreno, number one owner in baseball.
Number one owner in baseball. I'll tell you that. That's for sure.
If you look at him when he wasn't doing like a half-injured season, Noah Syndergaard had an amazing ERA, amazing whip. He's far enough away from Tommy John, according to inside injuries, to be effective. Like, there's no... I don't know what the problem is.
He was only up to 95 yesterday, but I watched highlights of that start, and there's something about the way the ball just pops out of that guy's arm, out of that guy's hand, that I just love. And I've always been intrigued by, and I always end up, you know, there are guys who like you just draft every year and you make sure on your team every year. And Syndergaard's one of those guys for me. Like Giolito is one of those guys for me. I did a TV show with his mom. I think I talked about it once on the show. So
I believe
like,
we did.
I like having Lucas Giolito on one of my teams. So just so I can root for him, because I'm like, go Lucas Giolito. My old manager used to knew him growing up. And she was like, oh yeah. So, you know, I enjoy that. And that's part of what fantasy baseball is about, guys. Like, let's not forget that. There's only one winner of the 15 teams and one winner of a 12 team, one winner of a 20 team. And if the only person who's having fun is the guy or woman who wins, that's a shame. That's a lot of sadness. So part of the joy of the game is getting guys that you like. Louis Robert is a guy that people love. If you want to take Louis Robert at 8 or 9 and you're saying you think about him the way the DVR thinks about Kyle Tucker, that's awesome. Take yourself Louis Robert at 8 or 9. That's your, without question. You know, it's not just about winning. Winning is good. Winning is fun. But it's also about enjoying watching your players, especially if you're only playing in one league or two leagues. Get guys that you like. Get guys that you enjoy.
I shed so many leagues this year. This is the happiest I've been.
Yeah.
I feel so great.
I will be shedding moving forward.
Oh, you got to do it, man. I'm down to like 5. from 12. Yeah. And it's just like this incredible weight has been lifted off of my shoulders.
Yeah, I bet. It's sometimes the auctions, the drafts just get, and you know, and then it's just a lot. It's like a daily, you feel like every night you got a new one. It's a lot. It's a lot to do, but
yeah.
Hopefully what I was thinking about last night as I was sitting down to do another one was, because I did one Sunday and then I did one Monday, as I was like, you know what? But then I get to enjoy the league for the rest of the year. So, you know, but that's not how you want to be thinking about it. You don't want to be thinking about that's too much fantasy baseball. Cause it is, right. it is really fun. It is really fun. Who's next? This is a great list.
So I want to go to Joey Bart at 277, starting catcher for the San Francisco Giants, who have discovered and unlocked something. Great top prospect. Numbers have been great. It just seems like people don't like him at all. I mean, for years it was like Joey Bart's the next big thing. Joey Bart, you know, he's being blocked by Buster Posey. Buster Posey retires. Joey Bart ascends, takes over the starting catcher role, and he's at 277. And this, I mean, we're using NFBC ADP, which is two catchers too. So, I would assumed it would have been 200 at worst, maybe like 170 as we moved closer to the season, but Joey Bart still caught down at 277 DVR. Explain yourself.
Okay. I did this by myself.
This is DVR ADP.
I'm looking at Bart.
Diver app.
I think I'm just wondering, he hit for average at AAA in a half season last year. And I just don't think that's part of what you're expecting from him, even if you like him. I think you're seeing probably more of a Mike Zunino profile. And if you get more than that, terrific. But I think the amount of swing and miss in the profile is a big part of why Bart is going as low as he does. All that is to say, like, playing time is kind of key here. I think Kurt Casale is a good backup, but not anything more than that. He's not the kind of guy that you want to have playing probably more than two out of every five times through the rotation. So Bart should have more than half the starts. He could carve out a larger role in that. He's a good defender, so he's got that going for him. If he's handling the pitching staff well, that can drive his playing time. I just wonder, for a guy that he struck out 29.4% of the time when things were going well at AAA last year, how much is he going to strike out figuring it out against big league pitching in an expanded role this year? And how much does that hurt us in the batting average category? The power, I think, is legit. We know the Giants have done a really good job with hitters the last two seasons. Great coaching staff there. So there's ways it can go right. But how long will it go wrong first before he starts to put it all together?
Ian, are you on or off Joey Bart? Especially 277.
When DVR does that kind of smart analysis, you just got to tip your cap and go, well, that's why you're the best in the game there at talking about this stuff. I think there's just so many other catchers right now. And I think that we're going to find there's so many good prospect catchers coming up that the game is changing about catchers. And who would you rather have, Omar Narvaez or Joey Bart? For me, I would rather have Narvaez, you know, and they're going in the same.
Is that the point of draft where you can get both, though? Can't you be like, let me just bang my two catchers out here, Narvaez
absolutely.
And Bart?
Yes. And last night, I got kind of caught. I don't know if I got caught. I took Sal Perez for $24. I had him. I was like, I think it was one of those weird moments where it was like 22, and I was at 22, and then at the last second, somebody hit 23, and I was like, I still like the deal here. I'm going to take him at 24. But I liked the idea of late catchers cheap. You know, and so Joey Bart falls into that category, and again, goes back to taste, right? So if you see Joey Bart and you see the future of the San Francisco Giants and the next Buster Posey with power, but not as much hit tool, clearly, then like, you know, that's your number two catcher, even your number one catcher. And you can go with him and Travis d'Arnaud. Some people love Aaron. What's the Nola dude? Austin Nola. Yeah, it's not Aaron Nola. That's the pitcher. The Nola from San Diego.
Nola.
Austin Nola. Okay, cool. I got it right. Thank God.
Yeah.
Whew. You know, it's
don't doubt yourself, man.
No. Everything's a little foggy. We were up really late last night.
Wait, was this like when you said someone clicked on it? Were you guys doing it on Zoom or were you running it on the CBS Yahoo or whatever?
CBS. Oh, jeez.
But I mean, you were clicking though, right?
Yeah. We were clicking. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you also had a Zoom.
Yeah, but I wasn't in the Zoom. I just came in at the beginning and at the end and said hello and goodbye.
Yeah, you got to pay Ian to be on video. That's
right.
How it works.
Absolutely, without question.
Doing shows with Lucas Giolito's mom.
So
you don't just zoom for free.
No, but so that's how I feel about Joey Bart.
Why did it take so long? Did they keep pausing? Like, oh, let's roll it back. Someone missed a thing. Like, was
yeah,
that
annoying? Oh, that's the worst. So many five. No, that's minimum. It was probably like eight to ten times we had to do it. And let's not get into it. It's just that it was a little too.
All right, we'll talk about it after the show.
It's all right. It is what it is. You know, it's the price of doing business. Whereas if we were live, it would have been a different experience, and you could eat a Caesar salad with chicken.
Yeah. Next player.
We always did it at a restaurant, and people would order Caesar salad with chicken or chicken fingers or something like that.
What
is even going on here? No, before the pandemic, I'll explain. I probably should explain. Before the pandemic, GDD was famous for the night of the draft. Nanda would be there, Colton the Wolfman, Cushing,
Adam Ronis.
That's what I was going to say. And Heaney's back, which is great. And
Jen Piacenti was there.
Jen Piacenti is still in the league. And so we would order food, and you would sit there, and you would eat, and you would auction. That's what it was. So that's how I always think of GDD. It's like you eat, you have a couple of drinks with your friends, and you auction. It's fun.
By the time he did GGD, which was the football version of it, his friend owns a bar. Steve Cozzolino, we're talking about. Our friend Steve Cozzolino, who figured out all the Yin guys. But we're not allowed to say it on air.
Oh, now you're allowed to say it. It's all over.
Next week.
Feel free. As you will.
Special episode.
I didn't take any of those guys last night. Not one.
Just to spite him.
No, just because everyone, like Jorge Mateo, I could not get Jorge Mateo last night. Someone
what
put
did Mateo
him out
for, go for? 11?
He only went for 6, I think, to Colton. Glenn
that's
got him for
that's
6.
A steal, man.
Well, I had him for 5, and I was like, all right, here we go. Someone bid 1, someone bid 2, I bid 3, someone bid quick 4, I bid quick 5, and then it got down to 2 seconds left, and Glenn took him at 6.
Oh, so he's the guy who's doing that.
No. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way you play the game.
I know, man. I know.
Let that drop. I enjoy that. You used to do that, too, in the room. At GDD, you would pull it in. 17. 17.
Well, yeah, you know why? Because you got to read that, like, that room. Like, if you go too fast, people are going to know they can bid you up.
Yeah,
and then like so. Actually, when I do that too fast, that's I'm gonna stick you with someone. Like I don't mind sticking you with a player, just to spite you. If it gets up a little, if I want the guy 15, and it's already up to 18, and you're just hitting me, just to get me up, I'll stop. Yeah. And you'll get stuck with him. So sometimes I got to pretend like I'm hemming and hawing when I really just want to jump on him.
Got it. No, that's fair. I've decided I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to price enforce. Really?
Yeah, you price enforce.
Yeah, you get stuck.
Fun, though.
I guess. I did it last night to Ariel and Derek Carty. I mean, Ariel Cohen and Derek Carty working together. It's a pretty strong twosome there. And they had a lot of money at the end of the draft, and Verdugo was coming up, and I knew Verdugo was coming up, and I knew they were going to get a bargain on him. And it was 7, and I didn't have that much money left, but I knew that if I bid 8, they would definitely go to 9. Because it was still a great bargain. So that was the one time where I enforced. And had I gotten, there was no way I was getting Verdugo for 8 because I knew that they were saving their money for that player. But that was the one price enforcement that I did. And not personal, just they had the money. I would have done, Frankie Stanfill also had a lot of money at the end.
We did the show with Ariel 2 episodes ago and got into that a little bit, how he operates with Derek, like how the two of them can reconcile their projections to become like a two-headed monster in the same auction. It was interesting. Anyway, those are more players. Let's help people. Bobby Bradley at 428. Diver. For a guy who's probably going to be the starting first baseman and is probably going to clobber 35 home runs if he gets 500 at-bats. No?
No.
Let's say 28. How about that?
Mm-mm.
Well, nope. Then I guess this is why he's 428.
Don't draft Bobby Bradley.
Why? I could see last year with Jake Bowers there. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But now that he's got a clear path to playing time.
Josh Naylor is going to finish the year as the Guardian starting first baseman. Josh Naylor can hit. And Bobby Bradley strikes out too much. There's a Patrick Wisdom sort of strikeout rate looming here with Bobby Bradley. I just think he has a hard time getting enough plate appearances to hit the high volume home run total. If injuries happen, maybe they have to play him. But I see him as more of a waiver wire Band-Aid than somebody that you want late.
Good line. Waiver wire Band-Aid.
What has Bobby Bradley done wrong in his minor league career? I mean, I know there's some 228 lines in there, but What has he done wrong that will make you think like he wouldn't hold on to this job?
Strikes out a third of the time, even at AAA. Like,
that's fixable. That's fixable.
I don't think so.
He's 25. He's still learning. He's a lefty.
He's got big swing. Big old swing. Likes to swing big. Look, Bobby Bradley's been around for a long time.
He's 25.
Yeah, but no, but he's been around. He's been around in the prospect world for a long time, right?
All right.
Lot of power. Lot of power. A big dude. But you know, it's that the reason he's so low is because of what DVR said. I mean, he strikes out a lot and he swings and misses a lot. He's like Adam Dunn a little bit. But maybe
Adam
not
Dunn
as,
had a long illustrious career.
That's right. That's right. But I was about to say, but maybe not as good. You know, he's got a he looks a little bit like Chris Davis sometimes. Could turn it on this year. Could happen. I'm not counting on him. You know, I guess in an AL only, I could see, rostering him. I could see that. That would make some sense. All in right. A corner infield spot every once in a while. I could
$11? $11?
No, like three. Right.
Okay,
$3.
Fine.
$3.
In AL only?
Yeah. No, I mean, I would think three, maybe five, maybe. Let me take a look. I could see what he went for in AL labor.
Sure.
But no, well, I'm down with what DVR is saying about that.
All right. While we're doing that, there was a trio down in the 400, 500, the 445, Josh Stamont. 457, Michael Givens. 508, Bruzdar Gretaral.
Ooh, your boy. I'm telling you, you might have something there.
I think, well, Givens, I think, is more my boy than Gretaral, but I mean, like, it's the same idea. I think Givens is going to be the closer for the Cubs. I think that's going to happen. Gretaral, I mean, like, without Kenley Jansen there, that's anybody's closer role. And maybe, you know, Dave Roberts going to rotate to show how smart he is, but that's still maybe like 11 saves for him, you know?
That was the question I had last night because Cushing spent 14 on Blake Treinen, which is, if Treinen was the guy, fully the guy, he'd be worth 18, I think. But with Dave Roberts saying that he's keeping things fluid, there's a piece of me that thinks that Gratterall could end up with that job more than Givens. I was high on Givens last year. Givens could have the job. David Robertson could have that job. Rowan Wick could have that job in Chicago.
I don't think they're going to. I think Rowan Wick is off. I think they're off Rowan Wick. That's the impression I got.
That's fine by me. I don't
from reading the NL Central roundtable, which I don't know if that came out today or not.
But Bobby Bradley went for $6. So we were sort of in the middle of those things. But Brasdral Gruderall, is that? I just butchered that name. I just butchered that name like I was working in a butcher shop. I think he interests me. He interests me quite a bit. Like, I think he could steal that stuff. You've been talking about him for years, this crazy dude. Remember, what team was he on before that he got traded to? Oh, the Twins. Remember?
Yeah.
And then that weird trade happened where I forget who was in that trade, but then he ended up with the Dodgers. Like, maybe that's what it is. Is it, by the way, on Jansen, people are really down on him. DVR, why are people so down on Jansen? He's going for a lot less than I would have expected.
Had issues with walks last year, had one bad month in the second half that I think left people a little bit concerned. He bounced back from it, though. I think August, September, and postseason was fine. I think it was July that was bad for him. I think maybe it's that the Dodgers were willing to let him go. Maybe that's messing with people a little bit. I just think when I look at this Dodgers bullpen, and if I sound like a broken record, I'm sorry. Blake Treinen is their best reliever by a healthy margin, even though they have a lot of good bullpen arms. So if they're just going to use Treinen in the highest leverage spot because that's how they want to operate now, he'll get some saves along the way. But I also think there's a chance that if it's a full-blown just committee situation, they're going to win enough games where if he gets half their saves, he might get 22 saves anyway. And the strikeout rates and the ratios are going to be really good. So I just see Treinen kind of in a tier of his own. And then I see guys like Vesia and Bruzdar Gratterall and Phil Bickford. They're all good. They're all very good relievers, but they're just not at that Treinen elite of the elite skills sort of level.
Right, but that might work in their advantage for being the closer, like you said.
Yeah, I just think it might be a partial share, though. Like, if they're mixing and matching and that's a reason not to take Treinen, then I don't think Gratterall can have sole possession either. The thing that's always confused me with Gratterall is he throws really hard, and he doesn't strike a lot of guys out.
Yeah, this is Nady Eovaldi.
Just like Dustin May, too, right? May, similarly. We've seen that. I do love Nate Eovaldi. He's so much fun. He's so good.
Was he on the list?
He's on DVR's team from last night.
No, I mean, I got to go consult the Cozzolino list.
Oh, yeah, I bet you it's on that list. I bet you he's on the list. I'd like to hear that list now.
Well, I sent it to you. You know the list.
Oh, that's right. You did.
I betrayed his trust.
Was it worth it?
Yeah, I think so. I think he was going to share it with you anyway.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Continuing bouncing around, Ian, I see your cursor is on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa
at
273. Did we talk about him on this show or did we talk about him on Best on the Board when it was like, this guy's going to be just, you know, touching this amazing Yankees lineup and, you know, okay, you bat eighth. But I mean, that's still going to come back around for like the leadoff to come just drive you in over and over again. You're going to steal. You can hit for average. You can hit for power in that park. Dude, he's going to be like the new Yankees embraced. You know, New York loves this guy. Where'd he come from?
You want to hear a New Yorker's opinion?
Yes.
He's going to be really good. I didn't even have my cursor on him. I wanted him last night. And he ended up going in the reserves, but I filled up those spots.
Oh, I don't get that, man. Like, I think he's just going to get counting stats. And
I think he's going to run. I think he's going to get 15 to 20 stolen bases. I think he's going to play almost every day. I really do. I think they don't want Torres there at shortstop, and they're right.
Would it be crazy to say, like, that Yankees catch? No one's talking about this. Gary Sanchez is gone.
Good news.
But Kiner Falefa is a catcher.
Nah.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he is. Oh, no. I know. But I don't think they're going to put him behind the plate. I think
why not?
Because I think Kyle Higashioka, they really like him. And I think he's hitting home runs.
Lindsay Adler doesn't seem to think so. She thinks she's going to be on the softer side of the platoon.
With Ben Roethlisberger?
Yeah, who's hurt now. But I think she meant eventually over the course of this. Let me see if I can pull.
Lindsay would know better than me. But from the outside watching the games, the pitchers, there's something that Higashioka does that I love. When a pitcher throws a really good pitch, he takes his glove and he points it at the pitcher. Like, good job, buddy. That's good. It makes pitchers feel good about themselves, which is important.
You were a catcher.
I was, and I used to do that. I used to nod my head. And I remember back when I was a pitcher, when I was younger, I was a pitcher, and I had a catcher named Frank Castellano, I think his name was. And every time I would throw a good pitch, he would like roll his eyes like, wow, that's a good pitch. And I'd be like, oh, cool, I'm going to do that again. You know, I was 12, But I think that has an effect on pitchers. I really genuinely believe the between a catcher and a pitcher, there's an energy in that space. And that's why I never liked Gary Sanchez as a catcher. It's why I never liked Jorge Posada. I hated Posada as a catcher. It's not that they weren't great fantasy players or valuable fantasy players, but I didn't like them as catchers because they did not do a good job between pitcher and catcher. That relationship is so important. So important to the success of a baseball team. It's why the Yankees in big games in the early, in the 90s, 96, 98, Joe Girardi would be behind the plate for those games because Girardi was great back there. Couldn't hit the same way, but boy, could he handle a pitcher.
Here, I'm going to read from the book of Lindsay Adler. This is the team-specific questions, part of the AL East roundtable. I think three of these are out now. We're trickling them out one at a time for the rest of the week. But what does the catching split look like in this post-Gary Sanchez era? Adler. It's a little difficult to say with new addition Ben Rortvedt dealing with an oblique injury that might put him on the injured list for opening day. The simple answer is probably that the lefty Rortvedt and the righty Kyle Higashioka can share playing time and be platoon mates. My instinct is that Higashioka is penciled in to get a bit less playing time than Rortvedt if he proves himself to be fairly solid. The Yankees know what they have in Higashioka, who is a solid defensive catcher but a light-hitting righty in a lineup that has often been too right-handed heavy. Okay. My hunch is that the Yankees see something in Rortvedt's offense that can be developed and will try to build up his production and playing time.
Okay, well, there you go.
I didn't think, until I read that, I thought it was going to be hit like Higashioka 75, Rortvedt 25.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. Also, with the lefty-righty situation, that certainly makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I'm looking at this thing that you sent me with Steve Kaz. He's right about a lot of these guys, and I didn't get hardly any of them except for Gleyber Torres last night. I didn't get Montas. I didn't get Manoah. I didn't get Carlos Hernandez. I didn't get Mateo. I didn't get O'Neill Cruz. I did stay away from DeGrom and Chisholm. I do love Yordan Alvarez. Didn't get him. I am wacky for Waka. Ramon Laureano I didn't get because timing. Gleyber Torres I did get. I do like Sano. He is going cheap. I wasn't touching Shane Bieber. Everyone knows he loves Nady Eovaldi. That's true. I do love Jamer Candelario. I didn't get him. Did not want Varsho. Although I was fighting you for him last night, DVR. It was kind of fun. And I don't want anybody fun. I'm not buying Cedric
Mullins. What did he go for? Because Mike Curlin.
16?
16.
Wow. That's a lot.
Well, I think I would bid 15. And I'm not buying Cedric Mullins or Robbie Ray. They're too much fun. That's not true. I bought Cedric Mullins for $21 last night. So, yeah, sort of close. But yeah, no, I did. Cedric Mullins for $21 is pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that.
That's great.
Anyway, so yes, that's the catcher situation. The guys I really want to talk about today.
Yeah, do you guys want to jump around a little bit? We got a little bit of time. I shouldn't be directing this. You should.
No. The guys I want to talk about are two guys that I took last night and a third that I want to talk about. I got Julio Rodriguez for $5 last night, and I got Spencer Torkelson for $3 last night.
That's insane. That's Spencer Torkelson should be a $15 player.
DVR? Not 15, but...
Why? Like, why should he be a $15 player?
Well, he's going to make the team possibly out of spring training. He's a stud.
It looks like he will make the team out of spring training. Well, let's say this. Julio Rodriguez...
He had 36 home runs with a 3-something average last year in the minors? What more does he have to prove?
So that's what I want to talk about. The new deal that the major league players did with the owners really does make it somewhat palatable for them to take the top guys, the Julio Rodriguez's, the Spencer Torkelson's, and the Riley Greens, and throw them on their team to make their team better because of the things that you get if they finish in the top of the Rookie of the Year or they finish in MVP over the course of the first 3 years. They're going to do it now, it looks like. They're not going to, and if Julio Rodriguez is playing in the major leagues, he's going to play every day. He's going to be their starting center fielder. He might not platoon at all. Kelnick might be in a platoon a little bit. But with Kyle Lewis out, you got Winker, Kelnick, and Haniger in that outfield. You had Julio Rodriguez in the center field. They want to win this year. They're spending money. Are they not going to bring Julio Rodriguez up? And if he is, he's looking like what everyone says Julio Rodriguez is going to be. Riley Green looks like a real great baseball player. Spencer Torkelson, the same. For years, we've been like, well, let's not take these guys. I think the rules are changing. I think that the top prospects who look like they're going to make the team out of spring training, there's discounts to be had for those guys. I that's where I'm at. DBR, what do you think?
I'm cautiously optimistic that teams will stop doing what they've always done to some degree, and I think there's a certain level of prospect that will fall into this group where they get more consideration to make the opening day roster now because of those changes.
Top five, top six prospects.
Like the elite of the elite, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
I think it it makes someone like Bobby Witt safer. It mm-hmm. makes Rodriguez safer. Torkelson, those guys for sure. They're more likely now than they were in under the old CBA to be on the opening day roster. I think it's still not a lock, though, even though it should be, right? This is still a longer-term problem that hopefully gets ironed out 5 years from now. And I didn't want to think about the next CBA. It will make me very sad because I'm sure we're going to have a repeat of what we just went through, and I'm not prepared for that. But I think the problem I have with rookies this year comes back to AAA being so diluted last year because of all the injuries that putting up good numbers at AAA wasn't nearly as meaningful last year as it would have been in years past. What pushes back against that a little bit, though, is not having a minor league season in 2020. There were plenty of minor league players that were just trying to get right last season throughout most of the year, at least through the first half. So age to level is now screwed up, and then the quality of the top level was screwed up. So I just think it's a very, very challenging time.
I'm looking at what the guys are doing in spring training. Like, I'm looking about how are you competing against these guys now? Bobby Witt is doing very well.
Do you want to move him up?
I mean, I don't know. He went for $19 last night in the auction. I think I was in till about 14 or 15 on that.
19 felt like an appropriate high-end price in a 15-team mixed league.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to, but that's why I wanted Torkelson for three and Julio for five. And then I would have taken Riley Green too. It's a lot of young. It's already a lot of young. But I took care of covering it in, hopefully, in the reserves. Because what I did was I took Tsutsugo, even though it's not a OBP
league. As a first baseman or an outfielder?
Both. He's covering. So if either Julio Rodriguez is not starting in the majors or Torkelson's not, Tsutsugo can cover that. And then I grabbed, Drew Rasmussen with my first reserve pick, which was kind of nice and surprising. Tsutsugo with the second, and then Nick Senzel with the third, who looks like he's going to have. And then Nestor Cortes with the fourth. I couldn't believe he lasted that far into the reserves, to the fourth round of the reserves.
Are people just assuming he's not going to start? Is that what this is?
No, he's starting. He's starting. He's the number four starter right now.
That's why is his price so depressed? Like, he was awesome in the minors. He was awesome last year. And everyone's like, oh, he's, you know, reserve?
Oh, yeah. He not only was he in the reserves, I was considering him in the same spot as Rasmussen in the first round. I was either Rasmussen, Herman Marquez, who also fell to the reserves, who I figured I could start half the time, or Nestor Cortes. And I decided on Rasmussen. And then I said, I got to take some bats now to cover for the kids, just in case the kids start, you know, in kindergarten. And then Cortes was still there in the fourth. And Rob Mershak and I, who was riding with me all night, thank you, Rob, he was still there. I was like, we got to take Cortes here. He's like, yeah. And then the last one here, I just want to throw this out there. The last one was a question of Garrett Cooper or Greg Holland. And I really wanted Garrett Cooper because I was like, I think Garrett Cooper, like, now's the time. And this is a good spot for him. DH is available, blah, 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 blah. And Rob was just like, you know, I just love me some saves and Greg Holland. So we went Greg Holland at the end because Joe Barlow is not doing good.
I don't understand that, man. Like, Greg Jewett sent me an update yesterday to put in for the Texas. And I got, you know, like, I was so busy in edits that I hadn't seen the news. And it's like Barlow, who I just bought for $12 in the AL only auction, is suddenly no longer in the mix for saves.
Is he not in the mix at all now?
I guess Jewett said he's more the high leverage situation guy now.
And who are they looking to for the closer situation?
Holland and let me pull up Greg Jewett.
Oh, good, good, good. Holland. All right. Attaboy, Rob Mershak.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You really don't do the sound effects anymore either, man. What's going on over there?
Sorry, man. It was a long night.
Hold on, Gregory. The Rangers will be using a mix of Greg Holland, Matt Bush, Spencer Patton in the ninth over Joe Barlow. Updating the Rangers bullpen based on manager Chris Woodward stating there will be shared save situation with veterans Greg Holland, Matt Bush, and even Spencer Patton. This approach allows Joe Barlow a longer runway adapting into high leverage situations in the major without being the focal point of the last three outs. The newly muddled situation represents another fluid situation already reflected in our high leverage ladder. Jewett's amazing, by the way. He did this turbulence ratings thing for every bullpen. Based on how, you know, pilots rate turbulence in the air. And it's awesome. And then he paired that with closers in waiting. strongly suggest people read that. It's good stuff.
There's another guy I really want to talk about here that people should be on their radar, not under their radar. I mean, Joe Adell, obviously Joe Adell.
But is Joe Adell going too late, right? At 216?
Yeah. A little bit. He'd go a little earlier. But but the other guy I wanted to also mention too is Andy Ibanez, who you have at 483. I freaking love, dude.
I love him.
Yeah. I really like him a lot. And he's playing now. He's got the job. Brad Miller looks like he's going to be in the outfield now. I don't know. Andy Ibanez, man. He's pretty cool. If you can give me
a minute, I got a Levi Weaver, Andy Ibanez.
Okay, here we go.
Go ahead. You talk. I'll find him while you talk. Also, I got a crazy Spencer Torkelson connection. Because I was going to make a joke about you doing a movie with his mom at the end.
Oh, okay.
But and I just wanted to make sure, like, his mom was alive. It turns out his mom is the chief financial officer for Guy Fieri.
Oh, all right. Well,
is that
there
crazy?
You go.
Anyway. That will not be for the man at the end.
For the man.
I got a better one.
All right.
This podcast is huge in Flavor Town.
It might be.
And Norway. We're huge in Norway. So the other guy who is interesting, it looks like Manny Margot is playing every day.
Michael Waterman just called him this year's Cedric Mullins.
All right.
Oh, here we go, DVR. Levi Weaver thing. You go first, then I'll read the Levi Weaver.
He's not going to hit for that much power, and he's probably not going to run that much, but he'll be decent. He'll be good if he plays every day.
That depth chart is just so frustrating to try and figure out. I mean, it's Austin Meadows is still there. Randy Rosarena plays a ton.
Yeah.
They didn't get rid of Kevin Kiermaier yet.
He's hurt, though.
He's banged up right now. Are they really going to send one or both of Josh Lowe and Vidal Brujan down again?
Yeah, Josh Lowe's not starting up.
Why not? Like, what does he not do well enough to play in the big league? Is this the guy that would start on 29 other teams that just happens to be on the wrong team?
He might be up May 1st. He might be up in June. But I wouldn't think that Josh Lowe in Tampa doesn't have the... They don't have the financial flexibility. Let's call our friend Jason Collette about it and ask Jason. But my instinct would be that you might see Brujan up. I would love to Austin Meadows to go away. But Manny Margot, I have him in AL only for $8. And I'm pretty excited about that because I think he's gonna have 450 at bats. Let's put it that way. But no, I don't think he's not a 30. You know, the thing about Cedric Mullins is he wasn't just like, oh, he's pretty good. He wasn't like Lorenzo Cain back in his day, 2020 hitting 270. He went 30-30. That just doesn't happen, you know? So to say he's the next Cedric Mullins is a tough sell.
Well, I think that's backwards. It's not like he's like, hey, Manny Margot is the next. I think it was, who's the next Cedric Mullins? Here are the candidates, and here's the closest match.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Sure. And you
read
can
the story.
See, all right. There you go.
Here's a Levi Weaver, Rangers beat writer. Which player with an average draft position over 300 will break out for the team you cover in 2022? Angel said, do you want to know what everybody said? Angel, Sam Blum said Reed Detmers. Corey Brock of the Mariners aghast that Adam Frazier was at 334. Steve Berman for the A's. AJ Puk at number 506 is a tempting choice here. And then also threw in a Seth Brown. Jake Kaplan gave us Jake Odorizzi and said he realizes it wouldn't be a breakout in the sense of an unproven player, but Odorizzi's set up for a nice...
Odorizzi's a dollar in AL only right now on my team, so nobody wants him. Nobody wants Odorizzi. So
he might be good
counts.
For the regular season. He might be a 4 ERA on a good team.
Yes.
With a boatload of strikeouts because of bulk.
I don't know about strikeouts. The problem is he's not pitching enough innings anymore. Like, he's just not going as deep into games. That's the problem. But if he can turn it back around, please, Odorizzi for $1.
Ooh, throw an opener in front of Jake Odorizzi.
Ooh. Not a terrible idea either. That's pretty
good. I don't think Houston's done that with anyone yet, but that'd be great.
All right, let me give you Levi Weaver's answer. It would be consistent of me to say Spencer Howard. After all, he's my candidate for Rangers Bounce Back Player of the Year. But I think the phrasing breakout is going to tip me in the direction of Andy Ibanez, who is ranked all the way down at number 587. When the Rangers traded Isaiah Kiner for Leffa early in camp, Ibanez became the what appeared to be de facto starting third baseman. But even after the signings of Brad Miller, Charlie Culberson, and Matt Carpenter, manager Chris Woodward insists he wants to give Ibanez, quote-unquote, some runway to prove himself at third base.
Nice.
But that hasn't really been in question. Ibanez has hit at every level, including the big leagues last season. The question will be whether or not he'll be able to handle third base defensively.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
There you go.
I think that's very fair. The kid can hit. The kid can hit. What about Jared Klenick at 143? I'm not getting near him. Just not touching him. You guys touching him?
I think that's more in line with an appropriate high-end price, and I find myself not taking him there because Dylan Carlson goes a couple rounds later, and I think I have similar expectations for those two players. And Klenick probably steals more bases, even though Carlson is capable of running more.
I like Carlson this year. I like him.
Carlson this year.
I would like Carlson at whatever number he's probably going 173 or so. I like that better than Kelenic at 143, personally.
What's wrong? Is Kelenic, would you have felt better if Jesse Winker wasn't around, or is it just he's not, you know, all the hype and all the, oh my God, Cano? Is just the Mets fans going nuts over a guy who turns out not to be that great?
He just, you know what? He forced himself to the major leagues, forced himself. Bratted himself out in the minors. I should be in the majors. I belong there. I swear I should be. And then hit like 108. Nah.
181.
He played very well at AAA, though. And I think this whole thing with Kelenic goes back to something I've wondered about for a few years. And I think, didn't we talk to Ariel Cohen about this 2 weeks ago, Nando? Does it hurt you more to debut and fall on your face than to not debut at all? Like if Kelenic spends all of last season at Tacoma and puts up that slash line or something close to what he did there, 320, 392, 624.
Sure.
He does that with power and speed for a full season. We're talking about Kelenic versus Bobby Witt Jr.
Yes.
In the same ADP range. But because we came up and saw it for 93 games and it wasn't good right away.
I'm taking Riley Green over Kelenic. I'm taking Riley Green over Kelenic right now.
I'm taking Julio Rodriguez over him.
Right. But at that price, you know what I mean? Like, what did Kelenic go for in GDD last night? Let's see what he went for.
Let me just remind you, there's a guy who came up and hit 220 with five home runs and four steals and 135 plate appearances.
And that was
back in 2011, and that was Mike Trout.
Yeah. Okay. Sure enough.
And Aaron Judge struck out a ton and couldn't hit in that first debut. There's plenty of players that come up and don't do something right away.
And again, it's one of those situations, sorry to interrupt you, DBR. It's one of those situations where it's not that I'm saying it's impossible that Kelenic's going to be good. Right? I'm not saying that. Like, he could be good. He could hit 275 and steal 19 bases and hit 25 home runs. That's fine. He's just not going to do it on my team. And if he does it, God bless him. He's on one of my teams. He's on one of my dynasty teams. So, like, I'm rooting for him. I just don't want to spend at 143 for him. And $11 isn't 143.
Trout the next year was 30 homers, 49 steals, and a 326 average as a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
There's a very good chance that the three of us could live another 100 years and never see that happen again.
And that's because they held him down for 20 games, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could have been 35-52.
Do you remember when Harper and Trout both came up the same day? And in that head-to-head league, we had pick up whoever you want, whenever you want. And one guy picked up both Harper and Trout and ended up winning the league. And we had to change the rules after that because people were so annoyed.
Miguel Cabrera was the MVP that year.
He was. Oh, and wait, can we just say, and I got to run in a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah, we got to get it. All right, fine.
But Albert Pujols returning to the St. Louis Cardinals. That's fun. That's awesome. I'm really happy about that.
He looked like an old timer walking through that gate onto the field.
He does a little bit. He does look a little old, that's for sure. But
he is pretty old.
Yeah, he's pretty old. But it was great to see. And I got to hop.
All right,
unfortunately,
let's get out of here then, man. You know, we got a lot of players who didn't touch. Who cares? Right?
We
gave you a bunch of good ones. I think it was a very helpful show for people who are drafting this weekend. If you are, good luck. Godspeed.
Absolutely.
We got your back. All right. For the man who refuses to see the beauty in Bobby Bradley, despite a lot of evidence to the contrary.
Draft Josh Bell at pick 124. He's good. That lineup, the top five, top six, that Nats lineup is good. It's a good place to hit.
For the man who did a show with Michael Kopech's sister, Ian Khan.
I did not.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this. Hope this helped. See you next time.
Good talk. Bye.